This is the IBJ podcast for the week of February 25th. I'm Leslie Weidenbender in this week for Mason King. Lawmakers have nearly reached what's commonly called the halfway point of the legislative session. By the end of this week, all the bills introduced in the House will either have died or been sent to the Senate for consideration. And all the bills introduced in the Senate will either have died or been sent to the House. It's a time when you get a real feel for what issues are gaining or losing traction. I sat down with three journalists who cover the State House, IBJ's Lindsay Erdody, who also authors the Rundown newsletter, the Journal Gazette's Nikki Kelly, and the StateHouseFile.com columnist Mary Beth Schneider to find out which bills are moving and which ones are fading. Here's our conversation. I'm honored to be in the IBJ podcast studio today with three great reporters. First up, we have our own Lindsay Erdody, who is covering her first session after several years covering IBJ's North of 96th beat. Welcome back to the podcast, Lindsay.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Next up, we've got Nikki Kelly, who is a longtime State House reporter for the Journal Gazette in Fort Wayne and is one of my former colleagues. Nikki, thanks so much for coming over to IBJ today.
Thanks for having me, too.
And finally, we have Mary Beth Schneider, a veteran political reporter and columnist who recently went to work for the StateHouseFile.com, where she is teaching Franklin College students how to be political reporters. Welcome.
Thanks.
So there's a lot to talk about, but I really want to start with the hate crimes legislation, which has at least politically dominated the discussion this week. Nikki, I wondered if you could start out by giving our listeners a little bit of a quick background of this issue, and why we're talking about it.
It's all about the fact that Indiana is only one of five states that doesn't have an explicit hate crime statute. In many states, someone can be charged with a separate crime, even like maybe they battered someone because they're black, and then on top of that, they would charge them with a separate crime. The Indiana bill would simply allow a judge to consider whether bias or hate was part of a crime to enhance a sentence. And so the big discussion, what it's all coming down to, is do we protect people specifically by naming classes such as race, religion, sexual orientation, those kinds of things, or do we just do a kind of all-encompassing saying a judge can consider bias of any kind when sentencing?
So, Lindsay, this issue has been especially important to business leaders this year. Why does it matter to business leaders whether we have a hate crimes law?
Well, business leaders are looking at it from the perspective of unemployment is really low right now. And so it's really hard for them to attract employees to come work for their companies. And they're saying it's especially hard to do so when they're in Indiana because of not having this law on the books. And many people are saying that companies ask about it and prospective employees ask about it when they're considering whether to come work here. And so they're looking at it from an economic development standpoint and really trying to make that argument to state lawmakers that we need this law if we're going to continue to bring the best and brightest to Indiana.
So it seems hard to believe, I think, for a lot of readers who haven't, or listeners who haven't really been paying a lot of attention, that a company or that a prospective employee would ask about a hate crimes law. But really, I would say it's part of a larger dialogue in Indiana. Mary Beth, do you think it's part of something bigger?
Oh, absolutely. Indiana got a true black eye, I think, with the RFRA debate, and this has the potential for becoming another real image breaker for the state. When people are bringing in employees, what if you're Muslim? They want to know, are Muslims welcome in Indiana? I'm Jewish. I'm not Jewish, but employee might say they're Jewish. I'm gay. I'm transgendered. Am I welcome in your state? And this sends a message that they won't put that in law. And they've been debating this. One of my very first sessions, there was a hate crimes bill up, and it was defeated over whether or not to include gays. And so this has been going on forever, and people know that about this state. People don't want to necessarily come, and people who were born here are actually moving out of the state because they don't feel that they're welcome.
So, Lindsay, you wrote a story earlier this year, last year, in which you actually detailed all of the business leaders, some really top people who were behind the effort to try to get a hate crimes law. Who are some of those companies that have gotten on board with this effort?
It's really, when you think about some of the biggest companies in the state, that's who it is. I mean, it's Anthem, it's Eli Lilly, it's Cummins, it's IU. I mean, it's some of these very large institutions that have thousands of employees, and they're really trying to make the push this year.
So the leader of the Senate, Republican Roderick Bray of Martinsville, actually assigned the hate crimes bill to the Rules Committee he controls, and he pushed it out to a committee, the Public Policy Committee, where, you know, one of the authors of the bill was the chairman of the committee. So, Nikki, what happened in committee?
They listened to hours and hours of testimony from people on both sides, though the majority of the testimony was in support of what they consider a comprehensive bill with a list.
And what do you mean by with the list?
With the list means actually stating the categories of protected persons, or, you know, their characteristics: race, religion, sex, national ancestry, sexual orientation, things like that.
I wanted to mention that because I think we're going to say the list over and over.
The list is very important.
And disability is on there.
Yeah. And so that committee voted 9-1. It was a very strong vote, and they sent it on to Senate for possible amendments on the floor. And then that is when the amendment came out to basically strip the list, and literally one comma and two words added to Indiana law, comma, including bias, just saying a judge can look at bias. That's all it says.
So it sounds like this was a dramatic hearing. Lindsay, tell us about, a dramatic debate on the amendment. And I'm not even sure you can call it a debate. Democrats had a lot to say. Republicans had little to say. Describe the debate, Lindsay.
Well, you're right. I think the Republicans all debated it behind closed doors. I'm not sure if any Republican spoke other than the author of the amendment. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the Democrats were pretty emotional about it, and, you know, telling stories of personal experiences and telling the other senators in the room that they felt like they weren't being recognized or they weren't viewing them as a real person. I mean, we're talking about some of the Black Democratic senators, and we have our first openly gay state senator who spoke on the bill. And so they were speaking from personal experiences, and it did get pretty emotional.
So the amendment passed, and then on Thursday, the Senate passed the amended bill, sent it over to the House. Mary Beth, you wrote a column this past week that I think is really interesting about how this kind of decision got made to take this list out of the bill. Could you talk a little bit about what your concerns were about the way this all came about?
This is not unique to this bill, and it has frustrated me the whole time I've covered the legislature, is there will be a controversial issue. A lot of people want to weigh in. They'll hold a committee hearing, and loads of people testify, and then they go into caucus. And
when you say they go into caucus,
they go completely.
One party, the party goes in by themselves.
That's right. And in this case, because of the supermajorities, it's a quorum of the Senate that is behind closed doors, and they do all their discussion back there. So when they came out with the amendment, there were three Republicans who actually talked: the author of the amendment, the senator who wanted the original bill, but he did not speak against the amendment. He simply asked some questions about what it did. And then one senator got up later to explain his yes vote on taking the amendment and gutting the bill. And the public was completely cut out of the true debate about why this is happening. Why do you think that's important? What's wrong with this word? What do you think is going to be the impact? And they sit there like little lumps on a log, and they do not respond to the actual public. And then the Senate President Roderick Bray basically has the nerve to say, well, you reporters can go talk to any senator. One, they've made it a little bit harder to do that. But secondly, this isn't about reporters. This is about people sitting at home watching this, and maybe they're watching on their laptop, and they want to see the debate, and they don't have any chance. And it's very difficult for them to get down there and go ask their senator, why did you vote this way? it's just wrong, frankly, to decide major public policy behind closed doors.
Now, the bill is going to the House now, which also has a Republican supermajority. Governor Holcomb has said that he wants the list back in. Business leaders have said they want the list back in, but it sounds like Brian Bosma said on Thursday he's really not interested in putting the list. Nikki, what did the speaker say?
The speaker basically said that the Senate spoke loudly and that they don't want the list, and frankly, he and House Republicans had already been pushing a different tact that didn't have the full list. I do think it's important to note, in one sense, Republicans are saying, look, we're being more inclusive. We are trying to cover literally anything you can think of. But then people who are the actual target of these hatred attacks or crimes are saying, but they want to be recognized that they are continually a target. And they want the state to say in some way in the law that they get it and they understand. Now, there is a kind of hybrid option that I think we'll see in the House Republicans, which is not the full list, but it is more than two words saying including bias. And it would basically say if any crime is committed against anyone based on a characteristic, trait, association, belief, practice. Much wider, it would cover things like religious beliefs, which has come up on the Republican side as pointing to attacks against people who maybe support Trump. So I think we'll see that in the House.
I think it's also important to note that one of the differences between having the list and not having the list, the argument that's being made is that your race is something you can't change versus, you know, being a Trump supporter or being on the IU basketball team was an example that Senator Taylor frequently used, are things you can change. You can take off that jersey. You can change which organization you're a part of, things like that. But some of these other things that the list would have covered are things that they're arguing, well, you can't change that about yourself.
So, Lindsay, I know you did a follow-up story where you talked to some business leaders about their concerns about this. We asked the question here at IBJ last year, do these business leaders have the clout to get something done? And do you think they do?
I would say if they did, it would have happened on the Senate side, because we've heard all along that the House has less of an appetite for that list. Business leaders really want the list. So if it was going to go in their favor, they needed to keep the list in on the Senate side.
Mary Beth, does the governor have the clout?
That's, I think, the real question. And no, right now he does not, and he is not doing very much. You know, putting out a statement is not the same as, for instance, going to caucus, which on rare occasions we have seen governors do to take their case directly to the people opposing them and fight for it. Also, Brian Bosma said something rather odd. He said he had spoken to the governor about taking out the list of the way the House wanted, and the governor did not speak disfavorably or some word like that about it. That's really odd. If he can't speak forcefully to the Speaker of the House on a phone call, what power does he have?
Okay, I could talk about this all afternoon, because I think it's probably one of the most interesting things going on, but I want to get to a few other issues. So here in Indy, one of the biggest issues is legislation that would, as it's amended now, provide $8 million a year for a new soccer stadium which the Indy 11 has been pushing, and an additional $15 million a year in taxes for the Capital Improvement Board to fund improvements at their facilities, including Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Lindsay, what is this bill all about, and why does it matter?
Well, we wrote about this all the way back in November, actually, as we started to hear about how the Capital Improvement Board was working with Mayor Joe Hogsett's administration to think about the future of sports and tourism in Indianapolis. And they're looking ahead at the project at Pan Am Plaza to bring hotels and the convention center expansion, and realizing that they're going to need more money to do these things and to make those improvements at Bankers Life. And so they kind of put together this long-term vision and went to state lawmakers with it to look at, all right, this is the money we're going to need. Here we are, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. This is what we're looking to do. And for the most part, it seems like the bill that Senate Appropriations Chairman Ryan Mishler put together was based on that plan that the CIB presented. So it was interesting to see this week that it the amount increased, because at first we were talking about $8.5 million that the CIB would have gotten in extra money every year. And now they're looking at $15 million plus the money that could go towards the soccer stadium.
So one of the things that I think is the most interesting about this bill is that we're talking about millions of dollars to fund improvements at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, but nobody knows what they are. There's not a plan to actually that says, here are the improvements we're going to make. So what is that all about? Why are we needing to make improvements at Bankers Life Fieldhouse?
Just to put it quite frankly, we need it to keep the Pacers here.
And the bill requires the Pacers to stay to get those improvements. Is that right?
Yes. It would require, it's on the first page of the bill, that the Pacers would have to sign a new agreement with the CIB for at least another 25 years. And actually, the same clause is built into the soccer language that was added this week, that we would have to have a major league soccer team for at least 25 years. So it all comes with a catch, you know, that the state doesn't want to give the money up without keeping the Pacers here. And the Pacers have pretty much all but said, we need improvements to Bankers Life if we're going to stick around.
So Mary Beth, over the years, have you found that these debates get interesting in part because this money, we talk about it to make improvements to this field house or to do that, but I mean, part of what it's doing is making it easy for the owners of major league sports to continue to have teams in an area. Is that a controversial thing?
Perhaps it is for me. I don't know that it is for much of the legislature. I still have trouble, just as a taxpayer, seeing my money go to billionaires. And especially yesterday, on Thursday in the House, they were presenting the budget. And as always, the minority party is presenting a ton of proposals, almost all of which are worthy things. Hearing aids for babies, a pedestrian bridge for an Evansville high school where right now the kids have to cross a really busy street. And those weren't very large sums of money, especially not compared to the CIB at all. And yet those are voted down as, well, we don't have that money right now. So you don't have money for hearing aids for babies, but you do have it for rich guys. I completely understand the argument that the Pacers help a whole lot of other businesses too, and some of those people employ a lot of poor people in working in restaurants. But it's still a tough picture.
I think the other important thing to point out in the argument for doing this is that those tax dollars wouldn't exist if not for the
yes.
Pacers. And these are all future tax dollars, so technically they don't have that money right now.
So again, we could talk about this a long time, but I want to move on to a tax issue, actually, the cigarette tax. Health leaders, business leaders are pushing for an increase in the cigarette tax. Nikki, what are they looking for?
Well, they have been wanting a $2 a pack increase in the cigarette tax. Now, that's their goal. I think they would have settled for $1, $1.50, anything to move forward. And, you know, they've been running radio ads and they've got billboards. And this is a very together coalition really pushing hard.
And do they want the money or are they looking for something else?
Well, I think statistically it shows that when you raise the price of cigarettes, people stop using them. I mean, so I think the $300 million a year from it, we could find a way to use, maybe for hearing aids for babies. But I think they also want the health benefit of the tax increase. And interestingly, Republicans just completely rebuffed them, even though House Republicans supported a tax increase as part of a road funding bill in recent years. But now, you know, both bills died this week. No one seems interested. Democrats offered amendments, both in ways and means and on the floor, very emotional speeches. And Republicans just aren't interested at all in that, though they did pass a vaping tax.
The argument for passing the tax on the e-liquids that goes into the e-cigarettes, the argument behind that was that it would decrease usage. So Republicans are on board with that whole argument behind it, and they want to decrease usage of e-cigarettes because they're worried about all of these kids in schools that are vaping. So it's interesting that it works on one debate but not on the other.
I think it's interesting that there are two issues we're talking about here, hate crimes and cigarette tax, where business leaders have been very forceful about what they want, and they're not getting it. Mary Beth, you wouldn't have necessarily expected that with a supermajority of Republicans.
I think it's actually because there are supermajorities. They have such strong numbers. They do not feel that they are at all in danger of losing their positions of power, and they can afford to stiff major supporters from the past.
I want to pivot quickly to gambling. There's a huge gambling bill. I mean, this bill would make major changes in gambling, and I almost feel like it's kind of moving under the radar. This bill would legalize sports betting. It would allow two Gary casinos to move. One would stay in Gary, but the other, as the bill is written now, could move to Terre Haute. And they would allow table games at the Horse Track Casino, something those Horse Track Casinos have wanted. It was going to be a few years. Now they're just going to give them to them almost immediately. And there seems to be really very little controversy about this bill outside of the casinos maybe arguing among themselves. Nikki, why do you think this issue has not raised a lot of attention this year?
Well, I mean, I definitely think the hate crimes bill and the budget talks have maybe overshadowed it. Though, to be fair, I mean, it only got out of Senate Tax and Fiscal Policy Committee yesterday. So, you know, we'll have second reading and votes in the Senate on that bill next week. So there's a lot more that could, I think, will come up. And I think the House especially will be interesting to see how they handle that. But yeah, there's tons of stuff in there. And every time you make a change in gambling law, it might help Casino A and hurt Casino B, you know. And so the lobbyists are working that one hard all over the building. And then tucked in it, like you said, is legalizing sports wagering, which we've never had in Indiana. And even at the hearings they're having on the bill, that's hardly being discussed at all.
Lindsay, can you talk about the sports betting situation? I know there was a court decision, right, that opened the door to make this possible.
Yeah, so last year the Supreme Court had a ruling that really, like you said, opened the door for all states to consider sports betting. We have had bills in the past that would have allowed it, but they didn't go anywhere because the Supreme Court hadn't ruled. Indiana really couldn't do anything about it yet. So maybe that's helped in terms of people aren't really talking about it this year because they've kind of talked about it before. I think as it moves through, though, the debate will stir up on the sports betting. And I definitely think, even though to the public it may not seem like there's been a lot of attention given to it, I think for lobbyists and for the casinos and everybody involved in gambling, it's been talked about quite a bit.
So we've mentioned the budget briefly. The main thing I want to talk about with the budget is that there's this huge push to increase teacher pay. I find that to be a somewhat new issue. I mean, teacher pay has always been a little bit in the background of a lot of budget issues. Mary Beth, why do you think the teacher pay has bubbled up to be the primary education discussion this year?
Because I think of what happened in other states. You had teachers in states that never see labor union activity, like West Virginia, coming into the state house and demanding change. And they are becoming an organized force, whether they're unionized or not. But what I see the legislature actually doing is just talking. There is a lot of patting them on the head and throwing a few things in, but they do not represent yet real money definitely into their pockets. They're still hung up on, well, that's a local decision.
Well, the framing of the issue has been fascinating this year, because the fact is that when lawmakers give education money, you know, every 2 years to the K-12 entity, the majority of that money goes to teachers. I mean, it's always been when they approve the education budget, that is almost, you know, almost all going to teachers. But suddenly this year, when they're doing that same thing, it's like, but you're not giving more to teachers. And I mean, it's a little confusing for everyone who has watched it for years, because that's where that money goes. I mean, yes, it also covers cafeteria workers and, you know, books and things like that. But the majority, the biggest line item that districts use that money for is paying teachers.
Lindsay, could you talk about a little bit about where Governor Holcomb has been on this issue?
Governor Holcomb has kind of been on the same side as we've seen Republicans, that he wants more money to go to teachers, but he isn't going as far as mandating dollars specifically to teachers. I don't think he wants to get involved at that local level like Republicans do either. Interestingly enough, he created this teacher pay commission. He announced it in his State of the State address, and I think it was last week we saw who was going to be on that commission, and there are no actual current teachers on the commission. And so he got a little bit of pushback for doing that when the point of the commission is to figure out kind of how to solve this issue.
Well, we're at the halftime point in the legislature, and all of the things we talked about could change dramatically. I hope that you will all come back and do this again once the session's over, and we can see if things change very much. So everybody, thank you. Mary Beth,
thank
Nikki,
you.
Lindsay, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Lindsay, Nikki, and Mary Beth. You can follow them on Twitter for up-to-the-minute details about the goings-on at the State House. Lindsay is at L. Erdody. Nikki is at NKelly at JG. Let me spell that. It's at NKellyATJG. And Mary Beth is at Mary B. Schneider. Before I go, I want to draw your attention to a couple of stories in this week's IBJ. Reporter John Russell explores how Amazon is targeting the $400 billion pharmacy market. He writes that the online giant sees opportunities in a market in which prices have been rising quickly. Also, reporter Sam Quinn tackles some tricky questions about the city of Carmel's debt and how the issue may play out in this year's mayoral election. Check out all the stories in this week's edition of IBJ, which arrives in the mail every Friday. The stories are also available at IBJ.com. Have a great week.